Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our House Committee on Transportation Policy this very rainy April 26, 2017. We have a number of work sessions to do today, but I think we'll wait till we have a full complement of legislators on the committee. So I would like to open a public hearing first on Senate Bill 344A in anticipation of others who want to speak to 352A. So we'll begin with 344A. Mr. Walker.
Representative McEwen, members of the committee, Senate Bill 344 requires snowmobiles and certain all-terrain vehicles to cross a highway at an intersection or more than 100 feet from an intersection, establishes the all-terrain vehicle access routes advisory committee, and directs the Oregon Transportation Commission to designate all-terrain vehicle access routes throughout Oregon in consultation with the advisory committee. This is very similar to House Bill 2910, except it limits this applicability to counties with less than 20,000, so it would be primarily in eastern Oregon that this would be in effect.
Thank you, Mr. Walker. I do see we now do have our proponents for Senate Bill 352A. So in deference to our colleagues, we're going to switch gears briefly and close the hearing on 344A briefly and open our public hearing on Senate Bill 352A. And I'll again turn to Mr. Walker.
So Senate 532, I'm, 352.
I'm sorry, 532. There we go.
Chair McEwen, members of the committee, Senate Bill 532A expands a prohibition on driving in the leftmost lane of travel to all vehicles, provides exceptions, classifies offenses as a Class D traffic violation, punishable by a maximum fine of $250, clarifies that campers, vehicles with trailers, and vehicles with registration weight of 10,000 pounds or greater must drive in the rightmost lane on roads with at least two lanes in a single direction of traffic.
Thank you, Mr. Walker. I believe we have a great deal of interest in this bill this morning, so I would first call Representative Helm. Senator Burdick, please join us.
If you would like, Captain.
And Captain Fugate, did I pronounce that correctly, sir?
You did.
All right. Welcome to our committee this morning. Please, colleagues, in any order you prefer.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for hearing this bill today. For your record, my name is Ken Helm. I'm state representative for House District 34. I think that the senator has the most comprehensive explanation of the bill, and I'll let her do that. She and I brought this bill in 2015, and we didn't quite get it over the finish line because of some questions from some of my colleagues, our colleagues in the House. And Senator Burdick has taken the bill back and done some more work on it, and I think has solved some of those questions. And it's a much better bill now than it was before. So I think we're getting there. My part in this is to let you know that in Washington they have a similar law. They've had it for a while, and it's working. And sometimes we have the opportunity to look to our neighbors to the north and south who have similar demands on their freeway systems and learn from them. The statistic that caught my attention from Washington was a little report back on how their left lane law is working. It was a report in 2016 about the number of, they weren't citations necessarily, some of them were warnings, but the number of times that the Washington State Police or State Patrol pulled over folks for hogging the left lane and impeding traffic. And that number was 13,000 times. So they're active up in Washington trying to make their roads safer by getting people out of the left lane, not just to relieve the annoyance of folks that are trying to follow the law and get where they're going, but also to address safety concerns that the additional passing causes on the roadways. So that's my contribution here. They're doing it in Washington. It works. Our bill will work similarly, and I hope you'll give it favorable consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Senator, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Jenny Burdick, and I represent the people of Senate District 18, West Portland and Tigard. Thank you so much for hearing this bill today, and also thank you, for Madam Chair, for your hard work on the transportation plan.
You're very welcome.
I'm hearing very good things about it and have high hopes for it. Senate Bill 532 is not of the magnitude of the work that you're doing on the transportation plan, but I feel it will contribute toward making our highways safer and more user-friendly for everyone on the highway. Failing to yield the left lane is a common source of frustration for drivers. You see all kinds of risky activity. You see tailgating. You see passing on the right. The Trucking Association, you'll hear from later, supports this bill because they know how dangerous it is when people pass on the right. It's just a common sense measure that will just remind drivers with the lowest violation available, but it's enough to get their attention. The presumptive fine is $110, and the state police are very good about issuing warnings at the beginning phase of any change in the traffic laws like this. I was recently on Oregon Public Broadcasting, and they played some voicemails before they interviewed me, and one of the callers said, please tell Senator Burdick that if she gets this bill passed, I will buy her dinner, I will pay for a massage, and I will do her nails. So there's a lot of enthusiasm out there on the freeways. And before I turn it over to Captain Fugate, I want to just sing his praises for his hard work on this bill. We worked with him every step of the way, and I feel very confident that this is something that the state police can use productively for all Oregonians. And I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Senator. Welcome, Captain Fugate.
Hi, good morning. For the record, my name is Bill Fugate. I'm a captain with the Oregon State Police. I've been in law enforcement for over 20 years. I've worked for a couple of city agencies and with the state police for about approximately 14 years. I've worked different capacities, but I have worked a lot of highway traffic enforcement during those years. Like most of you, I spend a lot of time driving personally, and for work, I probably drive at least 40,000 miles a year, a lot of those on state highways, divided highways, which is build targets, and we all see the different kind of driving behavior out there on the highway. One thing that we do see, in my professional career, are those people in the left lane that just drive and really don't allow traffic to flow freely. And one thing that we see, as we all have seen, is that causes people to make bad passes on the right, to be aggressive, to tailgate, just to make poor decisions. So this bill isn't really specifically targeting, aggressive or driving as far as the individual. Is people not sharing the road. And I always try to think of it in my head, like when you're at the grocery store, people don't, well, sometimes they do. They walk down the aisle, they let you go by. But when people get inside vehicles, mentalities change, and we all know that. We see the driving. It's almost like they're walled off from having any type of courtesy. So there's basically different things that people can do. One, we just get behind those vehicles, follow at a safe distance, hope they kind of aware they're not sharing, and they get over. Others tailgate. We've seen some pretty bad driving, tailgating, way too close, and then that can cause crashes and other issues. But especially between here and Portland, we have the three lane, or even on the two lane, you see people making aggressive passing on the right. They go all the way across the lanes, 80, 90 miles an hour, cut back over, and that's the behavior we're trying to prevent, or we would like to prevent with this passage of this bill. Currently, there is impeding traffic, which is a ORS 811 statute, but it's very difficult to enforce. It's very very vague, and just inhibits us from actually helping others share the road. Some believe that the drivers in the left lane are not paying attention, and this law may be pointless, but I'll make a note that I drive down the freeway in my personal vehicle, and they won't get over. But the car I currently drive, it's mostly a police car. It's OSP blue. It's got E-plates, antennas, spotlight. It's obviously a police car. Deck lights, all this. And it's pretty, like this morning, I was on Highway 22 just east of town here, divided highway. And it's pretty amazing how courteous people are when I come up behind them in that police car, because they're over very fast. And if any of you want to go on a ride-along, more than happy to take you to show you the driving behavior differences that I've seen out there in my personal and professional life. So here at the State Police, we do focus our enforcement efforts on transportation safety. We use an acronym called SOLID. There's five driving behaviors that lead to serious injury, crashes, or deaths that we focus our enforcement on. It's speed, occupant safety, safety belts and such, lane usage, which this is one of those things within our enforcement priorities, impaired driving, and the hot topic lately is distracted driving. So this would fall within our guidelines of our enforcement efforts for transportation safety. According to ODOT, last year on Oregon highways, 495 people lost their lives. This is a trend not only in Oregon, but across the nation. It is my belief that this bill is passed would prevent some of those frustrated drivers from making poor decisions or engaging in road rage. To note, I'm not trying to assert myself as a highway engineer or understanding of highway efficiency, just my common sense from my years of driving. And to be fair, I'd also like to add, it is possible this bill is passed, the left lane may not be used in fear of enforcement action, so it could cause some other issues there, but from basically just to be balanced. It'd be necessary, like the senator mentioned, like the move over law, the cell phone law. I mean, I've been experiencing those campaigns. It's all about education, working with our partners at ODOT, working with the city and the county law enforcement to have a campaign, educational. And it's like the representative mentioned, you know, to have a, and I'm aware of one of their large enforcement campaigns they had in the Seattle, Tacoma area, billboards, pamphlets, social media to hit and target and to focus on left lane, share the road. And we'd come up with some pretty neat hashtags or something, I'm sure. So that would be one of our efforts if this bill did pass. In closing, the way I look at it, with 495 people dying last year and the numbers on track again this year, if we could save one life by the passage of this, avoid frustration of other drivers, and to share the road, we'd have a success. And I forgot to mention for the record, the State Police does support this bill, and I'm open for any questions.
Yes, Representative McLean.
Well, I absolutely support the concept, and I support the safety issues and everything all three of you have said as far as, you know, trying to make sure we're doing the right thing by making our roads safer. The only question that I had, and I thought maybe if some of you have driven in Washington State more than I have lately, they have congestion lanes, and those congestion lanes, are people are paying more to drive in those lanes so that they can have a quicker ride to work or to their destination. Have you seen the left lane? You know, and it's many times the left lane. So, and sometimes they've got these zip lanes, and so the lanes change, you know, in morning and night. And so I wondered if you'd heard anything from Washington State about how this left lane, you know, bill or law affects some of those changes of traffic and the congestion lane where people are paying more or, you know, having something that they're doing to be able to get into a lane that's going to travel faster, that's on the left side. Is there any background or any data about that? Or
go ahead.
Chair McEwen, Representative McLean, members of the committee. You know, as far as my knowledge in Oregon, the only HOV lanes we have are in the Portland metro area. And I imagine if there were some of those switch lanes that were ever installed in Oregon, there would have to be some change, I'm sure. But there are many exemptions in this bill that we've discussed through other things. You know, for example, during our recent ice storm, the right lane may have more ice in it, so it could be safer. It could be a disabled vehicle or moving over for an emergency vehicle stop on the highway. And that's one of our hopes, is to educate not only the public, but also the spirit of the law for law enforcement and discretion during those times.
And I've been working on the transportation package as well for 6 months, and so there are some concepts that we're looking at that I just think we need to be aware of, some of these issues, if there are any contradictions between this law and some other lines that could be built in the future.
Representative Noble.
Thank you, Chair. I commend you for wanting to get the slow drivers out of the left lane. I do have a question for Captain Fugate, though. Specifically, how does this new law, this bill, differ from 811.315, which requires slow drivers to not drive on the right, or, I'm sorry, to move over to the right?
So, Chair McKeown, Representative Noble, members of the committee, I don't have that in front of me. Is that the statute that talks about campers and towing?
No, it's just failure of slow driver to drive on the right. If they're driving in the left-hand lane slower than traffic, they need to move over. Different than impeding traffic with six cars behind you.
I'd have to get back to you on that, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On that subject of campers and vehicles with trailers and vehicles with a registration weight of 10,000 pounds or more, I'm a little confused about that. And I know there's a history to this. Could someone explain for me, beginning with line 23 on page 1 of the bill, this section does not apply to persons driving the following vehicles that are governed by ORS 811.325, camper, any vehicle with trailer, and any vehicle with a registration weight of 10,000 pounds or more. What's that telling us? What's the history of that, and why does it not apply to those?
Anybody?
It's my understanding, and the Trucker Association, I think, is going to testify today, but it's my understanding that they aren't allowed in the left lane anyway, that category. I'm pretty sure about the 10,000 plus, that they aren't allowed there anyway.
Okay. I'll look forward to some additional clarification on that as we move on.
It's not to give them permission to stay in the left lane.
And Representative McKeown, Representative Wilson, members of the committee, yeah, prior to this, or currently, that's one of the only things that we can enforce are those trucks, you know, climb the hills or just in the left lane. And right. Generally they're pretty good, but we all know that sometimes they underestimate the hill or the ability of their vehicle or their weight. And so that's one we can enforce currently. But this would change that to those vehicles less than 10,000 pounds or others, basically anybody on the road.
Thank you. Vice Chair Vile.
Madam Chair, Captain, I'm wondering if you could describe how you think this bill might work in situations where we've got congestion already. For example, a Terwilliger Curves environment where maybe traffic in the morning is only moving at 45 to 50 miles an hour and all three lanes are packed. Is there anybody in that circumstance that potentially gets violated?
Madam Chair and Representative Vile, I think I can answer that because we put a specific exemption into the bill when the traffic flow is going less than the posted speed limit. Everyone gets to be in the left lane.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Certainly.
And that was going to be my follow up. What is the situation then when maybe it's that 55 to 62, it's a 55 mile an hour speed limit. We all tend to kind of work in that 7 mile an hour range. Is that still anticipated to be recognized in practice? What do we view as the likelihood of a circumstance there happening?
All right, Representative McKeown, Representative Vile, members of the committee. This is something we've discussed and considered. This would be a kind of a training for law enforcement. Obviously, if somebody's already violating speeding, so to speak, and a vehicle comes up, I mean, technically, I guess we could pull over both of them, the speeder and the left, and you know, left lane others. But that is definitely something to consider, and it's about the flow of the traffic. And I know on Interstate 5 that is actually a speed limit, but there's other areas that's it's violation of the basic speed rule, A11-100. And so it's spirit driving conditions, you know, kind of road weather conditions and other hazards that are out there. So it's a good question, and it'd be mostly, I think, educational for the officers, deputies, and troopers out there on the road.
One last follow-up, Madam Chair.
Follow-up.
Last question. I had this experience this morning. I'm coming down I-5 south of Donald, doing about 60 miles an hour. Car in front of me is getting slower and slower. I decide to go ahead and pass on the left. I get into the left lane. The car in front of me is doing about 62, but the guy behind me is doing about 70. Mm-hmm. And now I'm trapped. Mm-hmm. And everybody's along my right. And we're all going now over the speed limit. I think we've got to think through it. This is now a comment. I think we've got to think through how we are going to manage the education of drivers so that we don't continue to have that, I think, very common situation. So thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My questioning was along the lines of Representative Bile, but do we teach that now for student drivers, and then when they take the written test, when they get their driver's license? Because I remember back when I got mine, it was kind of, that was the rule, and everybody knew it. And now you drive down the road, and it's almost like people flunk the test, you know. And this happened to me just yesterday, Sunday, coming back from Gold Beach, and there was someone in the left-hand lane that just didn't have a clue, and everyone was passing them on the right, you know. And I find this going over to LeGrand, you know, that people are just uninformed. So the idea of billboards, you know, that say, you know, don't drive in the left-hand lane would be good, but I'm wondering if it is an education standpoint, and then how do we enforce it? Because if you come up behind someone, I would imagine you could take a camera and prove that in court. Otherwise, it's your word against them, I would think.
Correct. So Representative McEwen, Representative Barreto, the members of the committee, what I'm hearing from you is that how would we enforce that? You know, it's obviously just like other violations. If I was in an unmarked or marked car, a lot of times in a marked car, I can hang a little further back and watch driving behavior. An unmarked car, obviously, we can get closer to capture those or driving behavior normally that you wouldn't do. But you just obviously what I would be doing, it's like following distance. This is an example. Like when I'm watching somebody's following distance, I can testify in court that, you know, for approximately one half a mile at a speed of approximately 55 miles an hour, vehicle one was following vehicle two at, you know, one car length at 55 miles per hour, and basically articulate why that was unsafe. You know, it was wet road conditions, and like the driver's manual mentions, our driver's education is one car length per 10 miles an hour or 2 to 3 seconds in ideal driving conditions. So I'd watch that driving behavior for a little bit of time and have enough I could testify to in court on why that following too close is a violation. So I would expect in something of this nature, same kind of thing, I would watch. And I wouldn't right off the bat stop somebody. I would watch them for at least a mile and see how they're congesting that traffic so I can really articulate what they're doing. And, you know, and I pull people over for falling too close, other violations. And a lot of times it's an educational moment, you know, kind of see our discretion on which direction we go, citation or a warning. Because really we want voluntary compliance. We're not out there just write everybody tickets. So I think that would be the way that would be enforced. Or there could be other methods that we could do with unmarked cars. So,
Representative Meek.
Thank you, Chair McEwen and Captain Fugate. I can see a scenario where everybody's driving, and more particularly, I travel from Clackamas to Eugene or Corvallis for games in the fall, and both lanes may be going 55 or 56 or 57, but they may all be going pretty close to the same, you know, mileage, but totally just backed up. How do you account for that type of an event or situation? How will we account for that?
So, Chair McEwen, Vice Chair Meek, and we're members of the committee. Similar to, you know, when the traffic's getting congested and slowing down lower than the speed limit, there's really nowhere for them to go. So I would assume that there'd be almost an affirmative defense that I didn't have anywhere safe to go. And I'd like to think through training of law enforcement and maybe education of the public, that'd be kind of the option for them. It's like, I really know where safe to go. I can't squeeze between cars. And they're moving at the best capacity they are. That's the way I would see it as an enforcement trooper on the road.
Representative Wilson again.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't need anyone to address my previous questions here. Reading just a little further.
All right, thank you. And Representative Noble.
My follow-up questions have also been answered.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Any other questions for this panel? Thank you. Very, very appreciate your.
Madam Chair, did you have another comment, Representative Helm? In my file on the bill, I had a copy of ORS 811, 410, and 425. So I thought I could take a shot at answering Representative Noble's question about how is this bill different than existing law, if it's helpful.
Representative Noble?
That would be great. I was actually talking about 11315.
Okay. That I don't have. So I
thank you
try.
Very much. Thank you, Captain Fugate.
Thank you.
Now I would like to call, I think we have three other people who would like to testify, Mr. Russell, Mr. Treese, and Representative Barker. Thank you for your patience, Representative Barker. Thank you for joining us this morning. Mr. Mr. Russell, would you like to go first?
Madam Chair, I would certainly defer to the good representative.
No, please go ahead. I'm on the other end. Okay.
We'll continue with the proponents, and then we'll move.
Yeah, not a problem.
Thank you.
For the record, Bob Russell with the Oregon Trucking Association, and thanks for allowing me to testify in support of Senate Bill 532. You know, I think one of the things that we're really doing here is legislating courtesy. And Representative Barreto, I think that you sort of hit the nail on the head. When we grew up and we took driver's ed, we were told to not hang out in the left lane.
Right.
And apparently there wasn't a law that said we couldn't do it, but we didn't do it. And that's all changed. Today, as I drive around on our freeways, we have people that are just driving the speed limit in the left-hand lane. And many times, the right-hand lane is completely open. And they just fail to get over. They're just, in my view, are just being rude. However, from the trucking industry's point of view, it's a big safety issue. And we've all seen it, where we've got these little cars that are zipping in and out of traffic trying to get around those left-lane hogs. And they're cutting off trucks because they're cutting right across the front of us, and we can't stop in those kinds of situations. The other thing that concerns us is that they're passing us on the right. And many trucks, depending on their mirrors, there's a blind spot on the right side. So with vehicles passing on the right, it's very easy for us to move over right into a vehicle. Some of you may recall that in the old days you used to see signs on the back of trucks. And on the left-hand side, there would be an arrow that said passing side. On the right-hand side, there would be an arrow that said suicide. And that's sort of the problem from our perspective, is we don't want people passing us on the right. And Representative Wilson, the biggest complaint, most frequent complaint that I get is a truck passing another truck, particularly on two-lane segments of the freeway. We've asked OSP, and we'll continue to ask OSP to be more vigorous in their enforcement of that. And that's lacking in courtesy also, because it takes a significant amount of time for one truck to pass another because their engines are governed and there's not much difference in the speed that they can go. But we have had that lawful requirement to not be in the left-hand lane for many years. So it is enforceable, and we would certainly ask that that happen. But anyway, from our perspective, and this is a courtesy issue, but more importantly, it's a safety issue, and we would certainly urge you to support 532A.
Thank you, Mr. Russell. Welcome, sir.
Madam Chair, committee members, thank you for listening to me. I'm opposed to this measure. My name is Jeff Treese. I live in West Lynn resident.
Thank you.
I'm opposed to the measure. Sorry, I'm a little nervous.
No, you're just fine.
I think we have a perfectly good measure on the books. It was referred to earlier. I don't think we need to be adding complicated code. There are a number of things that we can all agree on. I think passing on the right is unsafe. We've heard that. I think tailgating and speeding are unsafe. We've heard this from the police chief. But we have not heard any data that links the use of the left lane to either increased consequences or increased safety. There's been no such linkage. There's only been speculation that keeping people out of the left lane will increase safety. I think if we're going to pass some laws, then they should do something. You know, we should be certain that it's going to actually improve something. We've all been frustrated by someone hanging out in the left lane. There's no question about that. But many people who've been trying to use the left lane to pass have been frustrated too. And this is some of the other courtesy issues that people are referring to. For example, say following distance. We heard testimony from the police chief. Well, suppose you're leaving the safe following distance, but you're trying to get over into the right lane, and people are passing you on the right lane. there's no way, there's no safe place to go, as the policeman said. So I see enforceability as a real issue with this, because everyone's idea seems to be different about what the safe following distance is, and I don't see that sending people to court to plead their case that they were just leaving safe following distance and there was no safe place to go is reasonable. There was testimony that it works in Washington, but no, all we heard was how many times they've pulled people over. That's all we heard. And if that's all we need to do is pull people over and give warnings, we can do that with our current laws on the books. Now, I don't know about most of you, but most of the highways that I travel on are very congested already. They're at or near capacity. So now we've got a really strange situation where we're telling people not to use the left lane. And what we should be doing is trying to get the most safe use out of the road as possible. And I don't see this measure accomplishing that. There are a couple things that could be considered in legislation, I think, that could make a left lane, a left passing lane effective, but there are at least two things that would have to be addressed, and they have not been addressed with this. One is there's no provision in our law for exceeding the speed limit. So if we're going to use the left lane for passing, we have to define how fast you're allowed to go to pass, and such things as how long you're allowed to stay in the left lane, and what happens if the person to your right slows down. Those sorts of things are not addressed. So there's exactly one situation that the current law, the current proposed legislation would cover, and that's when the speed the traffic is moving at exactly the posted speed limit, because the moment it drops below that, then everyone, as we heard, can use the left lane. But when it's over that, then you're already breaking the law. So I don't see that the language in this is making it clear for people. It's just not easy to understand. And the second one is passing on the right, which we heard is dangerous. If we're going to make the left lane a pass-only lane, which it kind of is already, according to our Oregon statute, but it's only common sense that we'd make the right lane not passing lane. You can't pass people on the right, and that is not addressed in this law either. So we've heard a lot of dangerous activities, and I think we should be aggressive about stopping people when they're doing aggressive driving. It's already against the law, but I don't think that we should be calling people hogs without knowing the situation. That's not necessarily what they're doing. They're not necessarily hogging that lane. And I think, I'd like to see us pass laws that do something, that are effective, that improve safety, and we have no evidence that this would do that. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Representative Barker, thank you for joining us for this morning, and thank you for your patience.
Testimony. Thank you. I'm Representative Jeff Barker. I represent the Beaverton Law area, and also I consider myself to be representative of the state. I worry about the whole place, not just my little area. This bill didn't come across the finish line in 15 because it was a bad bill. And I hope you won't send it back to the floor this time. They talked about Washington State has very strict speed limits up there that they monitor. I mean, so if you're going under the speed limit, that would be a problem up there. If you're going over the speed limit, it's another problem. They didn't address, so how fast can you go? It's 65, I'm going 70. You want to go 75, who gets the ticket? I'm going 80, you want to go 85, who gets the ticket? And Captain Fugate talked about people going 80, 90 miles an hour cutting around. They should do something about that. You're not allowed to do that. That's already a crime, and that needs to be stopped if they have people passing. The complaint, this seems to be generated out of people driving from Portland to Salem, this bill. And it is frustrating. I take that drive as well. If I don't want to get frustrated, I can leave 10 minutes early and everything's fine if I have to go a little bit slower. It doesn't really matter that much. When Captain Fugate listed the problems, number one was speed. So we're going to get the left lane open so we're going to go 80? I mean, it just won't work. As many of the things my good friend here said, newly minted friend, he made some very good points. I don't know how you enforce that. We have had conversations with the proponents in the lounge, and they've said, oh, it's just up to the discretion. Police need bright lines on these things. If you read the paper at all, especially up in the Portland area, everything's about race these days and racial profiling. So who are you going to pick? And so if you get stopped and now, and everybody else is not getting stopped, and you're not a white man, you're going to go, you're picking on me. And maybe they are. I doubt it. Oregon State Police are a very professional department. I don't see them as being racially profilers. But the people who get stopped will believe they are. And that's something, that's a belief that you, that's very difficult to change. I don't know how you enforce this law. And another thing, stopping people, you know, it's like the police routine. It's dangerous to stop people on the freeway. I was an Oregon State Trooper. I worked the freeway between the Donald Arroyo Junction and the Markham Bridge. And I can tell you on a rainy night when you're standing beside the road and one of Bob's big trucks comes by in the rain at 55 miles an hour legally, that's pretty hazardous out there. I've seen more than one Smokey Bear hat go rolling down the freeway. This does not fix a problem. It's going to create more problems. And I hope the committee won't move this onto the floor. I would be surprised if it can pass this time. It didn't pass last time. We're running out of time on the floor. Anyway, I'd be glad to answer any questions about that. I just have strong feelings about it. I worry about some of the consequences that could come from it that I unintended. I get that they want to have that right or that left lane flowing freely. A lot of times I've come up behind people from Washington who are not going to go over the speed limit because they think they're in Washington. And they won't go, you know, above 65, something like that. Thank you.
Vice Chair Meek.
Thank you, Chair McKeown. Representative Barker. One of the things that I've heard from folks out there on the, you know, in the state and in my community is that when it comes to our transportation dollars, and et cetera, they feel very possessive about that left lane or any lane they're driving. So right now, you see some folks get in the left lane, they're going the speed limit, and they're saying, go around me because this is my lane and I'm going to keep it. And so I think what happens is they get that possessive, you know, or and maybe it's an attitude, maybe it's a bad day, and they're just saying, you know, forget you. And the only thing I'm saying, yeah, you know what I was going to the only thing I think that this law beyond enforcement would just let them know, no, it's not your lane, it's everybody's lane, and it's your time to get off of this lane. That's the only thing that I would see in supporting this, beyond the penalties, the fines, et cetera. It's just to get people out of the attitude, this is my lane, I paid for it, and go around me. So, but what do you think?
We have a law, Representative Noble mentioned, about doing that already. So you could pull somebody over, and the state police said it's very difficult to enforce. This one would be harder to enforce. Mm-hmm. You could pull people over and give them a warning and say you need to move over. And I did that when I was a trooper if they were going slow. There's a lot less traffic when I was a trooper, and the freeway flowed pretty well in those days. But there's too many people. I mean, it's part of the problem for housing and everything else. The population's growing, and we need to have great transportation improvements. But this bill just isn't the answer. I mean, I know there's the issue. I don't know how big of a problem it is, but this doesn't answer it. It would cause more problems.
Thank you, Chair.
Vice Chair Vile.
Madam Chair, I was going to ask Officer Barker the same question. Under current law, if we were just to manage our enforcement a little more efficiently, do you think it would solve the problem that this bill is approaching?
I do, because they're saying mainly it's about informing people and educating people. That would do that, I think. And we all see when we see somebody stopped, you know, the halo effect takes, everybody drives a little more careful. I think we have enough laws to do that now. I think this will be an additional law that doesn't really solve the problem and will, I believe, create problems.
Thank you.
Representative Noble.
Thank you, Chair McKeown. I wish I would have thought of this question when Captain Fugate was up here, but
he's still in the room. I'm sure we can get him back
I'm
up.
I'm going to try our trucking representative. 2 years ago, I wasn't here, but we passed legislation that created different speed limits on many of the highways in eastern Oregon for trucks and for passenger cars. And this bill talks about flow of traffic, and is it conceivable that we could create the same issue with cars weaving in and out if we have the right lane, trucks, trailers, campers going the flow of legal traffic at 65 or 60, depending on where they are, yet still below the speed limit allowed by passenger cars, and end up with a similar dynamic that you're trying to avoid?
Madam Chair, Representative Noble, I'm glad you asked that question. One of the issues that we have faced for many years in Oregon is speed differentials between cars and trucks. Historically, it's been 10 miles an hour. The last two sessions, the legislature passed bills and raised the speed limit primarily on highways in eastern Oregon. When they did that, at our request, they changed that differential to 5 miles an hour. There was a bill that was about to be introduced in this session that would have basically completed that for the entire state. The Department of Transportation asked for an opportunity to address that themselves through the Speed Zone Review Panel. And that panel has been working since earlier this year. We had a report early this month that they've sort of completed the engineering research of that request, and that from an engineering standpoint, there is no reason not to change the differential throughout the remaining parts of the state from 10 miles an hour to 5 miles an hour. So it has been an issue, but I think that we have, over the last few years, we've improved it dramatically by reducing that differential.
All right. One thing that's coming to mind, and I don't see ODOT in the room this morning, so I really can't ask this question at this time, but I've heard, as this is unfolding, conversation around the educational component, using ODOT's ability with billboards and signs to try and educate people about the dangers or the benefits of being courteous and addressing left lane driving. I should ask this of the proponents of the bill, has there been any consideration of delving into this realm by doing an education campaign to see if that could have any kind of an impact on the behavior of Oregon drivers? And I'm just throwing that out because I heard somebody about education.
I would think so. I mean, that, and they were saying this would, for especially early on, be an educational process.
Mm-hmm.
We had the educational process. And I just want to also say, if we had the truckers, if everybody drove like the truckers, we wouldn't be having any problems. The professional truckers, in as much as I go up and down and used to have to go to California frequently,
yeah,
do a great job of driving safely.
Thank you.
One last round. Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I pulled up the Oregon driver's test, and the very first question, number two on page 15, is lane travel. And they cover that right off the bat, that you should travel in the right-hand lane. So it's not like it's not in there. It's just not in – it's forgotten, I think, by a lot of people on the driving.
Any further questions for this panel? Well, I'm sure this is a conversation that will continue for a period of time. Gentlemen, thank you for participating this morning. Thank you for being here. We have some other things to get to this morning, so I'm going to close our public hearing on Senate Bill 532A and reopen. Let me get back to where I belong here. Reopen our public hearing on 344A. And Representative Barreto, I'm glad you're in the room. I just had a note, actually, that has come to me. Let me get back to it. Well, Mr. Walker, go ahead and touch on the bill again so we know what we're talking. Let's reorient here for a minute.
Chair McEwen, members of the committee, Senate Bill 344A requires snowmobiles and certain all-terrain vehicles to cross a highway at an intersection or more than 100 feet from an intersection, establishes the All-Terrain Vehicle Access Routes Advisory Committee, and directs the Oregon Transportation Commission to designate all-terrain vehicle access routes throughout Oregon in consultation with the Advisory Committee. This probably looks very familiar at House Bill 2910. Is kind of its twin, but there are a couple of minor details. I believe that the Senate Bill 344 only applies to counties with a I'm sorry, House Bill 2910 applies to counties with less than 20,000 population, and 3044 would apply to the state.
Representative Britta, if you'd like to comment while you're doing that, I'll call up Ms. Joyce and Mr. Omlin. Thank you for your patience.
Yeah, that was, I worked with Senator Farioli on this at the time. I didn't realize that they had done a work group on this, and so we got together last year and decided each to drop our own bills. And the main difference is just the population of the counties. And my argument was every county, maybe apart from Multnomah County, has rural areas, you know, where state highways go through, and so I wasn't willing to limit it to 20,000.
Great, thank you. I have a note that my office has been contacted by the Senate, confirming they're working on a combo bill that may amend these two bills into one and apply it statewide. So I know there's a conversation going on. You may know more about that than I do.
Well, actually, I don't, but I went to HRO this morning and just asked them, you know, if this bill passes out of committee with that limitation without being amended, the same as mine, what happens when they come together at the end of the session? And I was unclear on how that works. So.
And it may be that we have an opportunity to amend it here to solve the issue. So we'll be working with you and your office, certainly,
that'd
to make sure we get it right. Ms. Joyce, welcome.
Good morning, Chair McEwen and members of the committee. Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation, and I'm sure you do remember this from House Bill 2910, mm-hmm. which is quite similar to the Angros version of Senate Bill 344. Again, this specifically 344 came out of that interim work group that discussed ATVs operating on state highways. The work group issued a report, and most of those recommendations are contained within the 344A engrossed. Three differences, again, as Representative Barreto indicated. In 344, it is limited to counties with populations of 20,000 or fewer. That was not part of the work group's recommendation. The work group recommendation was for these ATV access routes that would be designated by the Oregon Transportation Commission. Each of them would be done on a case-by-case basis. So while it is likely that they are most appropriate in rural areas for safety concerns and other reasons, these ATV access routes might be appropriate in Lane County or in Marion County where there are more rural areas where they make sense to make connections between trails, or for example, between a campground and going into town to reach the grocery store or a restaurant or a gas station. So the idea here is short access routes along a state highway, making these connections for convenience, for economic development, for tourism. That's the idea here. But again, that limitation in 344A was not part of the work group recommendation. Another piece that was not part of the work group recommendation is what's missing in 344A is the allowance for ODOT to write rules about vehicle equipment. So what happens in the bill and was part of the work group recommendation is that these ATVs would be exempted from the usual on-road vehicle equipment, things like lights, blinkers, horns, that sort of thing. One of the work group recommendations was, let's give ODOT rulemaking authority to decide what might be appropriate for these things to have on them when they're going to operate on state highways. That is not in the bill. And the third thing is the membership of the advisory committee. So the way this would work is proponents would bring forward an idea of where one of these connections would happen. And then an advisory committee would take a look at that and do various analyses that are sort of described in the bill and make a recommendation to the OTC about whether that should become one of these ATV access routes. The group, the advisory committee in the work group recommendation was pretty large, a lot of members, and in the bill it's slimmed down somewhat. So those are the three differences. One other thing I want to mention that the bill does is makes a sort of technical change in existing law. So existing law says if you're at an intersection with a state if you're crossing a state highway, you have to do so at least 100 feet away from an intersection. Well, the reality is that some county roads and city streets allow ATVs there already. So what the law says technically is if you come up to a state highway, you have to divert 100 feet down the road to cross. Of course, that doesn't make sense. So the bill makes that change to say you can cross over the state highway at the intersection. The final comment I want to make is about the State Highway Fund. So you're all familiar with the constitutional restriction on use of state highway funds. Gas tax dollars are constitutionally dedicated. Current law provides for a calculation to be done each year where gas that goes into ATVs used off-road can be extracted out of the highway fund because it's not being used on the highway, and it goes to the Parks Department for their ATV program to be used off-road. The Department of Justice tells us, and what was discussed quite a bit actually in the work group, was making a small allowance so that the highway fund is constitutionally protected, so that because ATVs will now be used on road, there needs to be a slight adjustment in that calculation. I was directed by DOJ to put that on the record, and I have done so. And so there you have it. That is my testimony, and I welcome any questions.
My eyes are a bit wide. Thank you, Ms. Joyce. Welcome, sir.
Good morning, Chairman, members of the committee. My name is John Omlin. I'm an owner of Power Sports Store located in Eugene, Oregon, off-highway vehicle enthusiast, a member of Oregon Parks and Recreation Department Senate Bill 192 Working Committee. I have a three-year appointment with the Bureau of Land Management Resource Advisory Council and administrator for the Willamette Side-by-Side Riding Group, a group of over 500 side-by-side enthusiasts that self-organize rides using Facebook. And by the way, when I started, my first time providing comment up here, it was 425 members. So from the time we've been chatting up here, it's grown 125. So a lot of folks are interested in this. I am also co-sponsor of the annual Willamette Side-by-Side Festival in Oak Ridge with the Chamber of Commerce. I spoke at earlier public hearings in support of this bill with exception of the population restriction. The following represents my point of view and not that of the Senate Bill 192 Working Committee nor BLM. I am in favor of the bill with the exception of Section 6, Paragraph 4 that would limit this bill to counties that have a population of less than 20,000. In a reply email from Senator Farioli, dated March 3, 2017, the senator said, "The reason we limited this bill to 20,000 population was to give this a fair trial in rural areas where people use four-wheelers and other ATVs daily, where the motoring population is used to seeing these vehicles on rural roads, and with an adequate and successful demonstration project that Oregon's most populous areas would see that ATVs are no problem on Oregon roads, city streets, and in controlled circumstances, highways. In short, it's a demonstration project, unquote. In my opinion, there is no need for a demonstration project since local jurisdictions already have authority to allow ATV use on routes deemed appropriate. Through road authority designation and or city-county ordinance, at least one county and several cities have passed ordinances allowing these vehicles to travel on city and county roads, thus demonstrating that ATVs and four-wheelers are no problem traveling on city and county roads. I would like to reiterate that the Senate Bill 192 Working Committee did not make this demonstration as one of its recommendations. As noted in the report to the Interim Committee on Transportation dated August 8, 2016, the primary objective of this effort is to provide economic benefit, tourism spending, to communities developing such ATV riding opportunities. Some ATV riding corridors have already been established by municipalities, counties, and federal road authorities outside of the state highway system. Let's provide all communities in Oregon with the opportunity for economic gain under this bill. No demonstration is needed. Please remove Section 6, subparagraph 4 from this bill. Thank you for your time and service. I'm open to answer any questions.
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much for your testimony today. Committee questions, comments? Well, it seems to me that we have two very well-intentioned bills that have some minor differential. What I might suggest, Representative Barreto, if you're amenable to this idea, is that we get your office in touch with Senator Farioli's office, that we work to provide an amendment in this committee to kind of resolve those issues if possible. Do you think that's a reasonable way to go here?
I do.
I mean, I think amending
it. I'm sure I can convince it.
Amending in here and sending it back, or amending your bill on the other side. I mean, somehow where it has to happen, I'm perfectly open to the idea of it happening in this committee.
And I would also like to add that Amy was very good at helping us work. I'm sure you worked with Senator Farioli too on both of these bills, and ODOT has been very good to work with on this.
So are you Ms. Joyce? Can we put some people around a table and figure out how we try and reconcile these two bills into one in this committee?
Chair McEwen, I'll get with the Office of Representative Barreto and Senator Farioli, and also with Parks Department, who is very much involved, and I'm sure we can come up with
a
pretty simple amendment to get this cleaned up and ready to go.
All right. Representative Barreto, thank you for your work.
Thank you.
Representative Evans.
Thank you, Chair. I have a question, but more of a request. The Attorney General opinion or statement that the Attorney General wanted you to read, is that opening up expenditures from the fund for ATV activities?
Well,
and if it does, is that intended?
I am very interested in that. I understand the comment. I do. I guess I would like some data, and it maybe the work group has some data that would indicate what percent differential they think that very small account would have to accommodate to take care of their concern. It has to be infinitesimal. Yeah.
So
I understand the desire to get that on the record, but I think we need to have a little bit more conversation about that as well.
Madam Chair, follow-up to that, because that would actually change my vote I would support moving this whole package or not, because we don't need one more nose under the tent in that particular funding source.
Yeah. Chair McEwen and Representative Evans, this issue was discussed quite a bit within the work group,
mm-hmm.
And we tried to figure out ways to get it narrowed so that very little highway fund would be used, and that it wouldn't create a problem in terms of the ability to make these trails and have some kind of impact to the highway fund. We believe that it will be, I think I heard Representative Wilson say infinitesimal. I was going to say minuscule. It's going to be a tiny amount. The calculation has to be done to honor the constitutional restriction. We don't view it as any kind of expansion of use of highway fund for ATV trails or anything like that. I would call it a technicality.
I am going to juxtapose that akin to what happens with the money, the calculation that is made for the Marine Board for marine fueling, where there's a formula.
Mm-hmm.
You know how many boats, you know how many average gallons a year you calculate the numbers, and the money goes over to the Marine Board. Is this a similar calculation that is definable, I guess is what I'm asking you?
Right, Chair McEwen, that is what it is, and it's done today, and it's statutory that we do mm-hmm. a calculation between Parks and ODOT to figure out how much gas tax is being put into the tanks of ATVs but not used on the highway. And therefore it can go to Parks, and so then there would be a tiny bit that doesn't get sent over because of how much the ATVs are riding on the road. Again,
Representative Evans, I'm going to make an assumption and a stab at this, that it would be akin to the Marine Board calculation, where you survey the riders, you get an average estimate of how many miles they're doing off-road and on-road, and you just do the math. And that's how. I don't think it opens a big door. I think this is already done. I think what's going to happen is it's just going to change the calculation, because now there is a little bit more that's on road than prior calculation.
Thank you, Chair. Here, the follow-up question to that is, and again, I don't know, are ATVs currently registered like boats are registered?
Chair McEwen and Representative Evans, not with ONOT. They do get stickers from Parks Department. So there is a calculation of how many, or they know how many people have gotten the off-road registration. Parks is in the room if you have questions for them. But there is a system now for that for off-road vehicles to get registered through the Parks Department.
So it's like the Marine Board knowing how many boats are registered. So the calculation is done on something that is finite, if that's
correct.
An appropriate characterization. Any other questions for this panel? Sir, thank you for taking the time to come here today. We appreciate it. Amy, thank you, as always. I'm going to close the public hearing on 344A. And we have work sessions. We're just going to go rapidly through these. We'll start with opening a work session on Senate Bill 35A.
Chair McEwen, I move Senate Bill 35A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Tim, do you want to, I'm sorry, give us a bit of an update here so we know what we're voting on. Thank you. My fault. Getting ahead of myself here.
Chair McEwen, members of the committee, Senate Bill 35A increases from $1,500 to $2,500 the property damage threshold amount that must be met before a person is required to submit a motor vehicle accident report. We originally heard this bill on the 19th. There is no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact for the bill.
Now I will turn to Vice Chair McEwen. Sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair McEwen, I move Senate Bill 35A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Meek moves Senate Bill 35A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Barreto.
Aye.
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative McClain.
Aye.
Representative Noble.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Vice Chair Meek.
Aye.
Vice Chair Miles.
Aye.
Chair McEwen.
Aye. The motion passes. Do we have a volunteer to carry this bill?
Oh, I will.
Representative McClain, thank you. And I will close the work session on Senate Bill 35A. And I will open a work session on Senate Bill 36. And this time I will remember to ask Mr. Walker to enlighten us here.
Chair McEwen, members of the committee, Senate Bill 36 specifies that the Department of Transportation may waive by rule the requirement that a person seeking a motorcycle endorsement to operate a three-wheeled motorcycle pass a skills test, deletes a requirement for driver license or permit applications, provide information about permits issued to them previously or about previous suspension or revocation of driving privileges. We have a dash one amendment and a dash two amendment in front of us. The dash one adds the terms limited term commercial driver license and limited term commercial learner driver permit. The dash two, the only difference between the two amendments is that it adds an emergency clause to it so that ODOT can take immediate changes to, as you will remember, the Daimler Chrysler folks showed up and they have some issues with their drivers that may be commercial drivers in Germany, and we have some issues with establishing legal presence, and this would help them answer that problem.
Just to be clear, Mr. Walker, if we adopt the dash one stands alone, the dash two would incorporate the dash one and add the emergency clause.
Correct.
Okay. Committee members, I guess I'm going to ask what your preference is, or we could go through a formal process and see which of these amendments you prefer.
Two is my preference.
Does anyone? I'm looking just, okay. Let's give this a try and we'll see how it goes. Vice Chair Vile.
Madam Chair, I move the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 36, dated 4/18/17.
Vice Chair Vile moves to adopt the dash two amendment, dated 4/18/17. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. The amendment is adopted. Vice Chair Vile.
Chair McEwen, I move Senate Bill 36 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Vile moves Senate Bill 36 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, Danielle, would you call the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative McClain.
Aye.
Representative Noble.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Barreto.
Aye.
Vice Chair Meek.
Aye.
Vice Chair Vial?
Aye.
Chair McEwen?
Aye. The motion passes. Do we have a carrier for this bill? Vice Chair Vial. Thank you. I'm going to close the work session on Senate Bill 36 and open a work session on Senate Bill 37A. Mr. Walker.
Chair McEwen, members of the committee, Senate Bill 37A modifies laws relating to commercial driving privileges. It has a minimal fiscal impact and a minimal revenue impact. This is a bill that comes before the legislature every session, and it syncs up the Oregon CDL licenses with the federal regulations.
Vice Chair Meek.
Chair McEwen, I move Senate Bill 37A to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Meek moves Senate Bill 37A to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Yes. Representative Evans.
Thank you, Chair McEwen. I want to be yes. I would ask that ODOT communicate with the federal government about finding a path sometime for a hardship option for CDLs. We're not allowed to do that in the state of Oregon because the federal government doesn't allow that. And I think in certain cases, you take a person's ability to go to a job away, you really limit them. So some type of discussion about that at some point I'd hope we can have in the future.
I'm looking to staff for a nod.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Evans. Representative McLean.
I also want to thank the department for finding a way to deal with the situation that we had in front of us, where we had the driver who had already had a CDL, and they're going to be able to reissue that quicker than they thought they were at the beginning. So I think that's a positive. But I agree with Representative Evans that I think there are issues that we might want to explore in the future.
Thank you, Representative McLean. And again, thank you for helping work through that important issue. I know there were some grave concerns about the timing, and the gentleman that was here, I think it was very grateful for your assistance. So thank you. Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative Noble.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Barreto.
Aye.
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Vice Chair Meek.
Aye.
Vice Chair Vial.
Aye.
Chair McEwen.
Aye. Motion passes. A carrier for this bill. Representative Wilson. Thank you very much. Closing the work session on Senate Bill 37A, opening a work session on Senate Bill 38. Mr. Walker.
Chair McEwen, members of the committee, Senate Bill 38 directs the Department of Transportation to reallocate monies for transportation projects funded by the Jobs and Transportation Act, House Bill 2001 in the 2009 session, upon project if there is any money remaining from the statutory allocation, declares an emergency effective on passage. Each year since the JTA was put in place in 2009, there's been a bill to take funds from projects that are finishing up and apply them to either other projects or projects that are short on funding. We're near the end of the JTA, and it's not clear exactly how much money will be left, but that money will be allocated to leverage federal grant money, and that will be up to the OTC to decide where that money goes. There is a no revenue impact and an indeterminate fiscal impact.
Vice Chair Vial.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 38 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Vial moves Senate Bill 38 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Noble.
Aye.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Barreto.
Aye.
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Vice Chair Meek.
Aye.
Vice Chair Vial.
Aye.
Chair McEwen.
Motion passes. Carrier for this bill. Aye. Carrier. I got 3 minutes to get one more done here. Representative Bretta, would you carry this bill, please?
I would.
Thank you so much. All right. Closing the hearing on Senate Bill 38, opening a hearing on Senate Bill 645. Harvey.
Excuse me. Representative McEwen, members of the committee, Senate Bill 645 expands the definition of vehicle special interest to include Humvees, and there is a minimal revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
Chair McEwen, I move Senate Bill 645 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Meek moves Senate Bill 645 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion on Humvees? Vice Chair Vial.
Madam Chair, I simply need to voice a conflict of interest. After hearing the testimony, I ended up acquiring a Humvee, and therefore I have an interest in this bill.
You were inspired, sir.
I was indeed.
Thank you for noting that on the record, Vice Chair Vial. Any other comments? Clerk, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Representative Barreto.
Aye.
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative Noble.
Aye.
Vice Chair Meek.
Aye.
Vice Chair Vial.
Aye.
Chair McEwen.
Aye. Motion passes. Do I have a volunteer to carry this bill?
I can carry it.
I have two volunteers here. Vice Chair Meek has volunteered.
Knowing your conflict of interest, I think you should carry it.
Yeah. Happy to carry it, Madam Chair. Yeah.
All right, with you, Representative.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Vice Chair Meek. All right, and we will close the hearing on Senate Bill 645. Mr. Walker, talk to us a little bit about what's coming. Which is not much.
Chair McEwen, members of the committee, we have the two bills that we had public hearings on this morning that we can move forward if the committee desires to. I believe that that is it until we get any more bills referred to us from the Speaker's office.
So, committee members, I see no urgency in moving those two bills. That being said, that would put us in a position to take next week off. So my question to you is, if we put those bills off for a couple of weeks, we could take next Wednesday off and not have a committee hearing. Is everyone agreeable to that idea?
Okay.
All right. Then we will be posting that we will not be holding a committee hearing next week for lack of Senate bills. Anything else for the good of the order? All right. Then we are adjourned. Thank you all. All right. Then we are adjourned. Thank you all. Anything else for the good of the order?